Bam, we're live. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Producer of The Fall of Minneapolis. Correct, right? We're off to a good start.
I think you've nailed it.
I think maybe you're breaking up a little bit. Is that I suspect that's your connection. You froze. Off to a bad start. Damn, I jinxed us. You've completely frozen, Liz. Which is odd because your picture's perfect and crystal clear. But it wouldn't be the first time a guest froze. I suspect that's you. My connection looks solid. If you can hear me, Liz, could you log out and come back in? Guys, for months I've been talking about the fall of Minneapolis. And pretty excited to have the producer of the show on. The thing with, I watched a bunch of interviews that she's done. You love her colors. I know. I like the colors too, right? Let me see. Let me tell her I booted her off. I had to boot her off so she could log back in. Oh, no. We finally get Liz and she's broken. She'll come back on. The picture was so clear. It must have just been a fluke. I came into the office early this morning, into the studio early this morning. Just because I was so excited, I came in like 10 minutes early, make sure all my notes were tight. And my keyboard wasn't working. So I scrambled for 10 minutes to get my keyboard working. Let's see if she comes back in. I think she will. Is the fall nice in Minneapolis? God, that's a good question. I am curious in her journey of chaos as she sorted through it and made order and made the movie, The Fall of Minneapolis. She made order out of the chaos. If her life has started to like get some sort of normalcy. Aha. Aha. There you are.
Sorry. I don't know what's going on.
When you first came on, your connection was amazing. Now, I guess as long as we can hear you, it's good. Are you having any issues seeing me or am I all broken up like an Atari game console?
No, you look good and it's all good. So I don't know what the deal is.
Liz, I watched a gang load of your interviews. I watched the movie Fall of Minneapolis. I read the book. They're lying. Actually, I listened to the audio. They're lying. The media, the left, and the death of George Floyd in a long trip from California to Idaho. I listened to the entire audio book. First of all, thank you for making some sense out of the chaos.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I know there was a lot of chaos, and I think a lot of people had questions from the very beginning. And I tried to dissect all of it. Obviously, I had, you know, kind of a personal experience through it all, being married to the union president. But also as a reporter, I was just really bothered at the dangerous and divisive narrative they were pushing from the very beginning that the evidence never supported.
In all the interviews I watched, including the fabulous one you did with Megyn Kelly, and this is not a knock at Megyn Kelly at all, I can tell that the people who are interviewing you are basically using you as a psychologist because this has had such a huge impact on everyone that they're basically regurgitating to you what they read in your book and saw in your movie, and they're kind of like processing it. And so I'm going to try not to do that because it would be so easy to fall into that hole. So feel free to interrupt or interject wherever you go because I kind of want to hear from you. But I know the temptation to be like, I can't believe this happened. I can't believe they didn't give them bullets. They didn't give them rubber bullets. I can't believe the MRT, the cop, you know, it would be so easy to just regurgitate what you already know. Do you feel that also? Like you're kind of like a shrink helping the people that you process this sometimes?
Well, actually, it's interesting because I even putting the book together, I just thought, all right, this is going to be sort of my last chapter with corporate media. I was a part of that for about 20 years, and I just really walked away because I was kind of, just disgusted by all of the information we were withholding from the public, not only on this case, but other things. And I thought, okay, I'm going to put this book out there. I'll be able to sleep at night, you know, so be it. And it sort of blew up in a way. That I really realized it sort of has become free therapy in a way for me, but just how much this changed lives, you know, all across the country, all across the world, really in the profession of law enforcement, the disrespect we continue to see to this day, this chaos that was created in the wake of all of this and the lies that started right here in Minneapolis. So selfishly, I've gotten out quite a bit of, you know, I've been able to feel a little bit better also that the truth still matters. So that's helped me sort of keep going through all of this. But yeah, you're right. I mean, everybody has a, you know, my cousin this happened to, or my brother this happened to, or, you know, my husband went through this. And it also goes to show just how, you know, powerful lies can be and the ripple effect when people go ahead and maybe they didn't fall for it all in the beginning, but nobody did anything. So silence really can also be a problem. And here we are nearly 4 years later, and we're all living the consequences of these lies to this day.
The company I work for, CrossFit Inc., international company, having locations on all the continents, fastest growing chain in the history of the planet, faster than Starbucks or Subway, 15,000 gyms on 162 countries. When the George Floyd incident happened, the founder and CEO says, hey, I don't mourn George Floyd's death at all. And that was the beginning of a mob coming after him. And he sold the company and became richer than God. But I mean, it worked out good for him. Probably tons of stories like that, right? The second someone spoke up about this incident, about a guy having three times the lethal dose of fentanyl in a system, not the first time he's done that, having heart conditions, and he dies in an altercation with the police, and all of a sudden people, right? I mean, I'm guessing you've heard tons of stories of people losing their jobs for talking, speaking up against George Floyd.
Absolutely. And what was amazing to me as a reporter for so long, it seemed nobody wanted to go back and actually talk to the people that were really there, you know, including these officers, including members of the Minneapolis Police Department, who were essentially served up to this mob. And, you know, there was 890 cops in Minneapolis at the beginning of May of 2020. There are less than 500 now. But it seemed nobody cared to go back and talk to any of them, you know, and this police department is similar. It's similar to what has happened in other departments across the country, and everyone's less safe in Minneapolis as a result of all of this. And so that was sort of my point in going, trying to go as close to all of this as possible and, you know, gain the trust of those people to, you know, allow me to tell their stories. And in the book, you know, I profile a few of these officers who are in the third precinct the night that it's surrendered to the mob, because this is all part of the plan. And I don't think a lot of people knew that in watching the news coverage. The thought was that they would give up the precinct and then this rioting would stop that had dragged on for several days at this point in Minneapolis. As ridiculous as that sounds, and that, of course, did not happen. Instead, the third precinct, you know, if you watch The Fall of Minneapolis, you see it basically looks the same to this day, just this burnt out shell of a building that's now barricaded, and this, you know, blight and eyesore in the community, you know, 4 years later, and something that's never happened in U.S. history before. But again, it seemed that no reporters even cared about what took place there.
A precinct. It was like a 1970s movie. I remember seeing as a little kid where like a mob attacks a police station. The police in the movie, the police were the good guys. But basically, a mob was basically what happened in Minneapolis is a mob was basically told, hey, you can have this precinct. And of course, the bizarre details, leaving the gates open in the front for the mob to come in and locking the gates in the back so the cops can't get out. Some crazy details that you uncover. The buses that were there, that were supposed to be there to evacuate the police, not there. So the police are running on foot. Crazy. Are you proud of, are you like, is any part of you like, yeah, like you get to enjoy? I've made 10 documentaries, five are all time five in the top 100 best on iTunes. But mine aren't of anything of social importance. They're just like fun documentaries. Is any, and so I got to celebrate it. Like, yeah, I'm a badass filmmaker. I kicked ass. Does any part of you get to be like, celebrate the success of your film?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. You know, we've had, I think it's more than 8 million people or 8 million views on the documentary. And that was really part of this too. We wanted to give it out for free, you know, believing the truth should be free. And we also knew that, you know, putting up a paywall or something would prevent people from watching it. You know, I think what has meant the most to me personally have been the emails and the comments that say, gosh, I just wish that we had this information from the beginning. And these are all sides of the aisle. For some reason, this all turned into a political disaster, like so many things seem to be nowadays. But when people really do have the facts, they can make, you know, decisions for themselves. So why is the media, you know, manipulating this message? Why is our government withholding information from us? And those were the themes I really wanted to bring out in all of this, because I would really see that so often on so many stories. So that's what's meant the most through all of this for me, to be able to change minds. A lot of people won't admit that, though. However, you know, we live in a world now where you can never admit you're wrong. it seems. But there's also no real celebration, because, you know, here we still have four cops. They're in prison. A police department is, you know, will never recover. And if they do, it will be decades from now. And, you know, what really still keeps me up at night are all these victims left in the wake. And those are victims of carjackings now. You know, those are victims who've left the state of Minnesota. I've talked about this, but this domino effect, this ripple effect is unbelievable. But I also hope that leaving this there, and I knew, you know this about journalism and news stories, it's kind of the first draft of our history. I hope someday someone will look back and say, you know what? We're not going to do this. We're not going to, you know, let's read this as a manual of what not to do, and actually show some leadership, because that's really what this is also, is poor leadership that I wanted to highlight in Minneapolis and in the state of Minnesota.
I have a lot of friends who are police officers. Being in the CrossFit scene, it's a lifestyle practice that a lot of first responders use to basically stay in tip-top shape, right? Eat right, move right, and be in the highest physical condition that your DNA can be in, so that you're safe on the job and people are safe around you. So I have a lot of friends who are cops. Right away after the George Floyd incident, I started hearing things like, "Yeah, we had a call." And there was a black woman there with a box cutter waving around, and we all just drove away. I saw a guy doing 90 down the road. I pulled up next to him to pull him over. He's a black guy. I just drove by. My opinion is that the people really don't have a lot of people don't really understand that George Floyd was the moment. Some people want to blame the pandemic. Some people want to blame George COVID. But we know the statistic. It's like 6% of the U.S. population does 51% of the murders, and those are black men. And obviously, we know color is a correlate; it's not a cause. And they're killing their own. You know, it's like 96% of the people they kill are other people with melanated skin. I suspect the way the George Floyd thing unfolded has basically led to just the lawless society that's going on in all of these big cities. I mean, we've even heard the bizarre phenomenon. You know, we had that incident in New York you may be familiar with, where there was video of it. A black man killed a guy sitting on a bus stop with his girlfriend, and his girlfriend doesn't want to identify the murderer because she thinks it would be racist. Mm-hmm. I mean, the impact of George Floyd is like beyond, it's exacerbated racism. And ironically, the people who are the most racist, they stand out because they're the ones who are like, their support of George Floyd is what's getting all of these melanated people killed now, because the police aren't going into their neighborhoods to want to enforce the laws. Do you have that sense too? I mean, I think it's like pivotal. Like, I think it's like, hey, that we're living this right now. This is it. Do you have that sense?
Absolutely, Seven. So in Minneapolis alone, they recorded the three highest years of homicides since ever in history. So this is historic levels, and the majority of those killed were blacks, and those are the facts. But yet this is, you know, ground zero for Black Lives Matter. I mean, I think the number was, you know, nearly $90 million raised on the back of George Floyd, through Black Lives Matter. However, you know, corporate media has remained silent on where any of that money went. Well, turns out it didn't go to help Black lives. It's amazing to me that you still have the Black Lives Matter signs out in front of the lakes in Minneapolis, some of the, you know, more wealthy, affluent neighborhoods. You certainly don't see any in North Minneapolis and such, where they're begging for the cops to come back. And they never wanted them to go anywhere in the first place, but nobody elevated their voices through all of this. And, you know, and that's the sad reality in a way, that Black lives have never mattered less, especially in Minneapolis. But it seems that nobody wants to tell that story. You have Alex King, who's in the fall of Minneapolis. So keep in mind, Alex King is on the job for just a couple of days. He's the Black officer who arrests George Floyd, that it seemed no one knew was even there. And we wanted to go ahead and you know, include his story in the documentary. Here is this, you know, African-American kid, grew up with dreams of being a cop in Minneapolis. His mom's a longtime educator there. She adopted several children, just the great, great family in Minneapolis. And he's thrown in prison his second day on the job over all of this rookie officer. But nobody seemed to care about Alex. And he talks about that. He said, you know, I don't know why I was never included in any of this, but he said, you know, my skin color didn't fit the narrative, so it was ignored. I mean, he also knew, and that's the thing. If you care about George Floyd through all of this, you really have to look at how he was used. He sort of became a pawn. If you've ever seen the Greatest Lie Ever Sold, it was a documentary the Daily Wire produced when Candace Owens was still there. She delves into a lot of this with Black Lives Matter and goes back to George Floyd's apartment, which isn't even in Minneapolis. Keep in mind, he lived in a suburb in St. Louis Park. And she goes back there and says that she's, you know, interacting with his roommates. And the roommates say that George Floyd's family never even came to retrieve his personal belongings. His car is still there. All of his clothes are still there. It's really quite, really quite sad.
eBay. Someone can make a fortune. I bet you that there's money for that. It's interesting. He is. I want to play this clip from Megyn Kelly's interview with you. This is just absolutely wild. Coming from pains me to say it, our leaders. Okay, here we go.
It's say in a court of law. You show it. We're going to show a bit of it here. Take a look at spot 19.
And that's the director. How do you pronounce the director's name? Dr. J.C.?
J.C. Shea. Yep.
Shea. Okay. J.C. Shea. I'm always afraid to say his name because of the way it's spelled. Okay. Dr. J.C. Shea.
Shaven is in the courtroom, but America's on trial.
Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice.
Thank you, George Floyd. Let's hear a little bit more from our fearless leader.
But even Dr. King's assassination did not have the worldwide impact that George Floyd's death did.
I know it's a lot, trust me. Just going through all those clips, I always say the documentary could have been about 9 hours, because to me it's unbelievable what a lot of these again leaders had to say in the days that followed.
I want to be super open minded. Let's say we went to Chauvin's. Is it Chauvin? How do you pronounce Derek's?
Chauvin.
Let's say we went to Chauvin's house and he had hoods and swastika jackets and shit like that. And he woke up that morning being like, hey, I'm going to kill a guy. I'm going to kill a Black man today. Let's just say that was the case. How would you still ever prop George Floyd up as a hero? He was arrested for counterfeiting. He put a gun to a pregnant woman's stomach in a home invasion while other men robbed her house. It seems so obvious to me. Let's say I'm a Black social justice warrior. Wouldn't you be so pissed that these white leaders are trying to replace our beloved Dr. King with George Floyd? Like, why would you want your kids to look up to George Floyd in any way?
Yeah, it's really hard for me still to even wrap my head around, because, you know, you even watch the local news here in Minneapolis. They celebrate when George Floyd has a birthday. You would think, you know, and he really has no ties to Minnesota. He'd only been here a few years and was in trouble. Well, he was in Minnesota. That's another lie that was peddled. He was arrested in 2019, May of 2019, so almost exactly a year before all of this. And if you play the body camera footage from that arrest next to the body camera footage from 2020, they are eerily exactly the same. He's saying the exact same things. He's the subject of an undercover drug investigation in 2019 that, again, the Minneapolis police chief lied about. The mayor lied about, saying that they've never had anything to do with him. I've talked to several police officers who'd pulled him over in years past and whatnot. George Floyd was obviously someone who struggled with substance abuse. This is no secret. He spent most of his adult life in and out of prison. And, you know, I've been able to visit Texas in the wake of the documentary. That's actually where he's from. And they don't treat George Floyd the way that, you know, people here in Minnesota do. So it really is crazy to me. And I will say that many people now are just, you know, perhaps quiet on the issue also after learning what they learned. But if you did bring up his criminal history, my husband did as the union president, just to say, hey, there's more to this story. There's more to this guy's background. He was quickly called, and this was just in a, you know, few sentences of a press release. Then you're a racist, obviously. And you know, that you're called all of the things, but that's also part of the game plan here, to silence people. And I would say in this situation, that certainly worked. You know, Minnesotans, I am one, so I can say this, but we are a little bit more mild mannered and we wait for somebody else to speak up. I don't know if this would have gone the same way, if this would have happened perhaps on the East or West Coast, just with more domineering personalities, but I do feel, you know, that we had the perfect people in the perfect positions for this to play out. We have kind of plants picked, our leaders here. They're coming from other states. Millions of dollars, you know, is poured in for the DFL party, the Democratic Party in Minnesota. And they went ahead, and this is a presidential election year. And again, I think the evidence shows that George Floyd was really used more than anything else.
His legacy lives on Pornhub and on, it's true. It was like, as soon as I heard that, it was one of the first things I did, guilty as charged. I went straight to Pornhub and typed in George Floyd, and there he is, making his first feature film debut. And then this film, and then all the other,
and he was fired. He was fired from jobs here. This is all things that, you know, again, the corporate media in town would never even touch. He was, you know, a so-called, you know, security guard at a rehab center, but was fired after, you know, bringing basically a patient home with him. And, you know, the list goes on and on of things.
Was it a female patient, Liz? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did he have sex with her?
From what we've, you know, what we've been told.
So he's a predator and opportunist is the profile.
Well, and I think that, again, even if you look at the 2019 arrest, he obviously had many interactions. This was very rehearsed with what he was doing with law enforcement. Instead, you know, I'm talking about George Floyd being used, this whole I can't breathe mantra. You know, he's saying this before Derek Chauvin even arrives on scene. He's talking about his health in this 2019 arrest in a very similar way. It was, you know, this was sort of part of his MO about his mom recently passing away. You know, this wasn't the first time, you know, that the cops responded. And here's the thing about Derek Chauvin. He wasn't even scheduled to work that day. Memorial Day, but he just called in, as he often did, to see if they needed extra help, and they did. And he was also someone who partnered with minority officers the majority of his career, never with any issues. But it is amazing the power of the media, how they can go ahead and paint this all as, you know, he's, even as you said, you know, a racist and whatnot, despite the fact that racism never even comes up in his trial. There's no evidence of any of that in his past and whatnot. So truly remarkable that it was able to be sold that way to the public.
Wad Zombie, I don't see it on Pornhub. Keep looking. Maybe I sourced it wrong, but I definitely, I remember typing in George Floyd porn and you will find it. You will find it. Try not to watch more than a few seconds. It's porn's bad for you. So they say.
Wow, this is a whole new level on this chat. I didn't have the comments up until now. Hi, everybody. This is great.
You probably don't want to have them up. It's a wild crew. We meet here every morning at 7 a.m. This is the funnest place on the internet. When the George Floyd incident happened, it's funny. I didn't even think about this until I'm seeing you and I told you the story about what happened to CrossFit Inc. and it being sold around the George Floyd incident and my boss saying it doesn't honor Floyd. And then eventually I was fired also as part of being the toxic culture. And boy, I guess it would be kind of easy to tie it to that incident. When you talk about his previous arrest, if I recall right, in those previous arrests, he also would use the line, "I can't breathe." And he also swallowed narcotics at the scene. And if I recall right, I saw in the report that the doctor actually told George, "Hey, dude, if you keep doing that, you're going to have a heart attack. If every time you get pulled over, you swallow." Is that accurate? Am I remembering that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about his MO, clearly he has something in his mouth in 2022. Not only that, but the vehicle that George Floyd is pulled out of. Now, keep in mind, you know, he says he's claustrophobic. This is another line he has. And he's, you know, pulled out of this sort of cramped car. And this is why he says he won't go into the back of a squad car. And if you really watch, and this is, you know, another point I want to make too, this is the very first time that Minneapolis police withhold body camera footage from the public. Well, don't you think there's probably a reason for that? Because there was more to this than this viral Facebook video the public was allowed to see. So the FBI's called in within just a few hours of this case, and they locked this video down. This has never happened before. There's a reason, right? The taxpayers put the bill for these body cameras. This is supposed to increase transparency. We know, you know, the lines by now, how this all works. But then why keep this body camera footage from the public for so long? Instead, they released it about 2.5 months later. And that is only if you're a reporter or somebody who can go to the courthouse in the course of a couple days and watch it yourself. They don't publicly distribute this until it's hooked up nearly a year later to Derek Chauvin's court file. So that's also something I think people should be upset about, that, you know, you see many agencies now, and even before this too, where they would go frame by frame with the public as to what's happening and more, you know, some of these critical incidents or deaths and whatnot. But that didn't happen here. And I think that would have also changed a lot of this, that these riots didn't have to happen. There was more to this story. But instead, they only wanted to fan the flames and, you know, pour gasoline all over this, to be quite honest. And again, throw the match on it all in Minneapolis.
I want to show this first contact with George. But I want to ask you a question real quick. Is the simple psychological profile that people saw something happening to George Floyd, and because he was a large black man, that other black people were like, they started identifying it with it as them? And the critical thinking skills went out the door, and it just became an emotional response. Is it that simple? Is it just like is it just pop psychology? Is it that simple? Like, hey, you saw this, and all of a sudden you start imagining it being you. You know what I mean? It's like the same thing when you go see the movie Free Willy, right? And you start crying because the whale's having some problems. Is it just like that? They saw this, and they're like, shit, that's me getting held down by the cops, and they just throw all critical thinking out the door, and they have this emotional response, and then they act on it. They go to sleep unconscious and act on it for 3 years.
Yeah, I think there's certainly something to that. This is a generation, especially too, I think, I don't mean to sound like an old lady here, but it's definitely feelings over facts. The people, you know, that I worked with and whatnot, it was, nobody cared about journalism. They just wanted to, you know, push activism in the wake of all of this. And I would be like, well, hey, what about this point? Or, hey, that's not true. Or, hey, they're lying, which is why I named the book that, you know, even again, you have the chief and the mayor saying, you know, this is something we've never seen before that Derek Chauvin is doing. We don't recognize this at all. And, you know, I just went online to the Minneapolis Police Training Manual. It's an online document that's been there forever. And I said, wait a minute, there's like two pages that are just mysteriously gone from the manual that were very obvious. They just disappeared.
Like, can you literally see it, Liz, where it's like page 51, page 53, or page 54, and you're like, where's 52 and 53? It's like that.
They just skipped. And then they come back online in a few weeks. And I'm thinking as a news reporter, like, holy cow, this is kind of a bombshell. Are we going to even like report this? The fact that there's this MRT thing. And if you look at the, you know, the video, it kind of matches what they're doing. Not only that, but in the body camera footage, if the public were allowed to have seen it, they talk about the MRT. The officers are talking about it. But instead, the narrative was controlled by these, you know, weak leaders, these liars, in my opinion. And nobody pushed back, even when they had the evidence really right in front of them. So I think there's a lot to that, you know, and also people are rushed to judgment nowadays. That is definitely how it works with this, you know, TikTok and Facebook, and everybody just wants a headline. But sometimes that's hard in, you know, these police interactions. And also the media loves to push this kind of stuff. You know, you've seen it again and again, before this and after this also, where there's a, you know, almost absent of fact in a lot of this, or you have to read, you know, seven paragraphs down to actually, you know, try to get some context as to what really went on.
Yeah, I'm going to show the footage that Megyn Kelly showed on her show of the initial contact. But is this an accurate description of what happened? He was saying, I can't breathe. Same thing he said in previous arrests. And then they pulled him out of the car. And then when they got him on the ground, that took 36 seconds after they got him on the ground. They called the ambulance. And why did they pull him out of the car? What if they would have just left him in there?
Well, that's the thing. You had these two rookie officers who, in reality, are treating George Floyd very nicely.
Very nicely, I think. Yes.
Yeah, they're listening to everything, every request he's making. They basically accommodate, and that is also a conversation just about how policing has changed here a bit. You know, my husband, who's a little bit older, I kind of asked what would they have done. Well, they would throw him in the back of the squad car and just rush him to the hospital. Instead, they're fighting with George Floyd, and he's saying he's, you know, and they're saying they'll roll
when
the
you
window
say
down.
Fight, when you say fight, they're trying to accommodate him.
Right.
And then he becomes combative. They're taking him out of the car, which he should have felt some reprieve. Right.
Right. He asks actually himself to be laid on the ground. That's in the body camera footage as well. And also, you know, George Floyd is the one himself that starts with the lies, talking, you know, they're asking, what'd you take, man? What are you on? Nothing. I have nothing. You know, cause they sense that something's off, but again, these officers haven't really been on the street for that long to recognize, you know, different things. And you call for the ambulance 36 seconds after he is on the ground. That was left out of the narrative. Nobody knew that. And then after a couple minutes pass, they're wondering where the heck is the ambulance? You have a very problematic EMS response that also is not part of this original, you know, narrative that the public is sold. And so then you have Tu Tao, who's, you know, facing the crowd.
That's the officer, correct?
Yeah. Tu Tao, the officer who is facing the crowd. He then calls for an ambulance again, to try to get them there and step up the response. So they recognize something is going on with this guy, but per policy, this MRT situation, it says right there in black and white, you know, to remain with the subject until EMS response. And again, nobody talks about how, you know, the fire rig, which had the person there who would be treating George Floyd, went to the wrong address.
And you show all of that in the movie, by the way, for those of you who you're going to be blown away when you see the fire engine and the medical services show up at the wrong place. All of that's in the movie. It's bizarre.
Yeah, it really is. And again, there was just more to this whole thing. And the way it was spliced and diced and sold is still to this day, I think, criminal in my opinion. And nobody has been held accountable. And then, you know, after we put the documentary out there, it's 9 days later that Chauvin himself is stabbed in prison at this federal facility where he's been with no incidents at all. And he's stabbed by a former FBI informant. So there's just a lot that I think, you know, people need to wake up to what's going on. And, you know, I am encouraged that I think more and more people have these last few years.
That is it. God, there's so much to say here. I want to show just the audience just to give them something to nibble on. I want to show them this is if I say anything that's out of needs correcting, please correct it. But this is the footage that was withheld. And this is the original contact with George Floyd. Now, just imagine this. You're a police officer. You've been called to a scene and he was called the store clerk called because he was using counterfeit money, right?
That's right. Yep. He had called the police. Counterfeit 20.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. Which, by the way, to me seems like a huge crime already, being that we all work for our money and money is we've agreed as a society that money is human energy. Right. If you steal money, if you're counterfeiting money, you're basically stealing human energy. So here we go.
Oh. And see your hands.
Damn, man.
Stay in the car. Let me see your other hand.
I'm sorry.
Let me see your other hand.
Please,
both hands.
Man, do nothing.
Put your fucking hands up.
So you're a cop. And you're asking to see a guy's hands and he won't show you his hands. But this cop also has to get home to his wife and his kids and all that shit, too.
Well, and he.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, and in 2019, he won't show his hands either. And what is he doing? He's, you know, hiding drugs, putting drugs elsewhere. That's, you know, what we know now.
There is one really bizarre thing about this that I want to ask you about, too, that I haven't heard anyone talk about. Here we go.
Other hand.
So there are two other people in the car, right? Someone in the passenger seat and someone in the back seat.
That's right.
What do we do?
Put your hand up there. Put your fucking hand up there. Jesus Christ. Keep your fucking hands on the wheel.
So he's been told a half dozen times to given orders and he's not obeyed at all. So to me, this is already resisting. Like, if this was me or you, we would have already had our hands on the wheel, right? Keys sitting on the dash, like right. Our parents taught us, right? Okay.
Dash out. Keep
your fucking hands on the wheel.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, Mr. Man, I got shot the same way, Mr. Officer, before.
Okay, well, when I...
That's a lie, right? I got shot the same way before? That's not true?
That is not true. He'd never been shot by law enforcement.
I say, let me see your hands. You put your fucking hands up.
Sorry,
you got him? Step out of the vehicle and step away from me, all right? Step out and face away. Step out and face away.
Okay, please don't shoot me. Please.
Now we're over a dozen commands with no listening.
Man, I'm not going to shoot please. You. Step out and face away.
I'm going to get out of here, man. Please don't shoot me, man.
So is there a cop over talking to the passenger now? That's the part I don't understand, how kind of free willy-nilly the passengers are. In a second, we see the passenger get out, and I'm like, shouldn't the passenger – like, if I'm the passenger, I'm scared shitless, right, that this guy's going to get us all shot.
Well, it's interesting. The passenger is Maurice Hall is his name. It's now documented that he was essentially George Floyd's drug dealer, but yet he was allowed to catch a bus and end up several states away because he left the scene. He recently was sentenced for a separate case, but basically was granted immunity in George Floyd's case. But he was recently sentenced, I think, to 15 years in prison for something else here in Minnesota. So it's truly amazing. But you have Alex King, who's carrying on a conversation with Maurice Hall on the other side of the car. Shawanda Hill is the name of the woman who's in the back seat of that car.
This is wild. Do you know what he went to jail for? What he 15-year sentence for? Was this Maurice Hall character?
Yeah, it was some sort of... I believe it was a rape case or a sexual assault or something shit. Along those lines. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Just lost my mom, man.
Another lie, I just lost my mom.
Yeah, that was, his mom had died nearly 2 years before. But that's also a line he used in the 2019 arrest as well.
So
sorry.
Do you feel like you know George? Liz?
You know, I even say this with the book and the documentary. This was never really about this is why I say I do have some empathy, because I think that he was used in all of this. This wasn't a good guy. And you know, what does it say also, that nobody even cares about him to go collect his, you know, personal belongings at all. None of, you know, all his pictures were still in his, and this was 2 years after the incident. So there was plenty of time to do all of that. And he had no communication with his family, this daughter, you know, that was also part of on all the main networks in the wake of all of this. You know, so obviously I'm a person who's empathetic to everyone. It's kind of my role as a reporter. But I just don't really understand how he became the martyr that he was made to be.
A hero. He's being held up as a hero. It was crazy to hear Megyn Kelly told you the story about her daughter who's in the fourth grade and how they presented George Floyd as a hero to her daughter and her classmates, even in the fourth grade. That story was wild.
Yeah, it was. And there's so many like that. I mean, in Minnesota, Governor Walz, who actually won re-election in the wake of all of this, that was one of my goals with the book, was to try to get this out before the election. Which I did, but then the Attorney General, Keith Ellison, and Keith Ellison, or in Tim Walz also won re-election. But again, the book and such was not covered. Why would it be? Because it went against everything that everybody fell in line for. But Walz went ahead and asked that all students, you know, this is K-12 in public schools in Minnesota, take about 9 minutes of silence for George Floyd. That did not go over very well, I think. Many people recognized early on they didn't want their kids, you know, bowing their heads in silence to pray for George Floyd. But that was something that was pushed upon them after all of this.
The name of the book is Liz Collin, They're Lying, The Media, The Left, and The Death of George Floyd. Look at that. 1,015 five-star reviews. This is such a great audio book, by the way. Like, you will enjoy it. As crazy as it sounds, it was fun listening to it. You will not believe the details of corruption. It's like mafia shit, from the governor to the district attorney to the attorney general of the state to the police chief. One of the things in there, I'm all over the place, but fuck it, whatever. One of the things in there is the police chief was a police officer who refused to carry a gun because it was against his religion or his principles. And he was at a bank robbery one time. This is the police chief who was the police chief during the George Floyd incident. What was that guy's name? Rolando?
Yeah, Madera Arredondo.
Arredondo. This guy was at a bank robbery and he snuck out the back. I'm just like, when you tell that story in the book, I'm like, because he refused to carry a gun. And then from there, he was promoted to up the ranks until he became chief. It's so it's kind of what you hear about. It's a boys club. It's a good old boys club.
Well, and that's what's interesting, too. You know, again, this is all about race and whatnot. You have the police chief who is black, who'd been in that position for years and makes this all about race. And I don't know what book you go to and you decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to throw my entire department under the bus. This seems like this is really going to go well. And, you know, that's why everybody was listening to him in the days that followed, going, what is he doing? And then they're questioning, why are we doing this for people who are lying about what we do each and every day? You know, what kind of message does that send? Talk about weak and poor leadership. So, you know, and then they're worried so much about the officers looking militaristic. He's not letting them, you know, wear helmets and vests in the early days of the riots, which is just completely insane. And instead, you know, coddling these rioters, you know, or these peaceful protesters. You know, I was in working still at WCCO at the time, and we couldn't use the term riots. You had to talk about them as protests. We prefer the term peaceful protests, despite, you know, infernos burning behind reporters as they were doing live shots for the 5 or 6 o'clock news. And, you know, and I'd never really seen that on that scale before, where we were fine with manipulating language. You know, we were given a directive in the days that followed, that half of the people we interviewed from then on the news had to be non-white or from a protected class. And that was the mandate from the top. So I'm saying, okay, so we're fine implementing racism. That's what this is. I've never in my 20 years as a reporter looked at someone's skin color before I decide whether or not to interview them. This is crazy. But they set a quota that's what we had to do after George Floyd.
$760 million of damage done. To put that in context, on January 6th, there was only $30 million in damage done to the Capitol building. There was no fire at the Capitol building. The protesters there did not have firearms. These protests were littered with firearms. Loads of people were killed. Shitloads of buildings were burned down. They gave up a precinct. The irony is I'm watching the UCLA stuff unfold on YouTube live. And all of those cops, they're dealing with, some of the softest and weakest people in society. I mean, these kids are all still masked up. They're all scared. They're all, 20 pounds overweight there. And all those cops are in riot gear. And yet the cops in Minneapolis weren't allowed to use riot gear because it would be offensive or it would incite violence. It's absolutely bizarre. I want to go back to Derek. Are you friend? Would you consider Derek Chauvin Chauvin a friend? Would you have Thanksgiving dinner with him? I mean, now that you've made the movie.
Oh, absolutely. This is, I didn't know him at all. And I talked to him, for the first time, just reaching out saying, I'm putting this book together. Do you want to tell your side?
Sorry, real quick, Liz, was the book before the movie or the movie before the book?
The book was before the movie. Okay. Yeah, the book was October of 2022, and then we just put out the documentary in November of 2023. So, and we wanted to put the documentary out right before Thanksgiving to try to ruin as many holidays as possible. Family fights and whatnot. We encourage
perfect. Well encourage done.
Such conversations, but yeah, absolutely. This is a guy, who'd been on the police department for nearly 20 years. And I've gotten to know all of these officers in a way through all this, never knew any of them before. And I think that Derek really thought in the early days, okay, well, he's not watching the news or paying attention to, they're kind of just in flight mode, trying to find a place for safety and whatnot. But I think he thought, okay, well, somebody's going to tell the truth about this, or, he didn't even know there was a lot of things in the book and in the documentary that he wasn't even aware of, involving his case. So that's really remarkable to me as well, that how kind of uninformed he was. And I think he thought, well, this is what I was doing. I was following training. Somebody's going to just tell the truth. And he, obviously felt, and all these officers do feel so betrayed by their police chief, by the head of training, and it's interesting, Thomas Lane, his story, he's the really tall officer who'd only been on the job for a few days also. He wanted so badly, he's a military vet, and he wanted so badly to be a Minneapolis police officer. He told me that, he was a white male, so he was passed over a few times because that's how hiring worked in Minneapolis. But he continued, and he volunteered at a Somali day camp for several years and was just sort of this, beloved guy. And the police chief himself went out for coffee with Thomas Lane and got to know him. And so finally he's hired. And then just a few days later, he throws Thomas Lane under the bus and throws him in prison. Again, I think these people needed to be exposed for what they really are. I don't know how a lot of them sleep at night, to be quite honest, that they feel good about these lies and what the city has, turned into. You talked about the damage, the dollar amount, but it's 1,500 businesses in total that were either damaged or destroyed. So few have really, rebuilt.
Reopened. Yeah.
Yeah. And even in downtown Minneapolis alone, they lost, I think it's 1,400 businesses between 2000 and 2022. But of course, they try to sell it as it's all about COVID or, the pandemic closing these businesses down. Absolutely not. I mean, Minneapolis has not come back like other, cities have in the wake of the pandemic. And why is it? Well, it's because of crime and there's no cops left anymore.
Were the other three officers didn't have trials, right? they were, for some reason, they decided, hey, we're not doing this.
Well, they went ahead and they looked at what happened in Chauvin's trial, which, you know, I try to dedicate quite a bit in the book, even more than the documentary, about, you know, not so much what the jury's allowed to see, but what they're not allowed to see in Chauvin's trial. So they took a look at this trial and they're saying, all right, we're not going to get a you know, fair jury here. We're going to be convicted. And they faced even longer in prison. Not only that, but Judge Cahill said that, you know, if you go ahead and, you know, sort of put us through this, they could, you know, tack on this court tax where their families could have been forced to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars if they went through with the trial. And they ended up being found guilty anyway. So it was kind of this, well, we'll go ahead and plead, you know, to try
to acquiesce to the mob, basically.
Absolutely. So you have, I mean, all of these guys will be lifelong felons when they get out. And even Tu Tao, I know we talked about him. And I recently interviewed him. That story is up on Alpha News, or also thefallofminneapolis.com, where we continue to follow the case. And, you know, there are many updates that we try to put out there for people to follow. But he talks about, you know, in his sentencing, after he pled, Judge Cahill was upset that Tu Tao was not remorseful, and he was quoting Bible verses, and he tacked on another year to his sentence as a result of that.
The judge was quoting Bible verses?
Tu Tao was quoting Bible verses. The judge was very upset by that. And he tacked on another year. So he was given nearly 5 years in prison.
What was the judge's name?
Judge Peter Cahill is his name.
Is he still sitting in the same courtroom?
He is. Yeah, he's still in Hennepin County. And we tried to highlight some of that in the documentary as well. Many people have been given promotions. Nobody's lost their job or anything. In fact, yeah, if you get promoted, you get a promotion, you get promoted. That's kind of how it has worked.
You guys got it. The book, there's so much more in the book. If you like the movie, you have to listen to the book. You will really enjoy the book. It's not, I'm not sending you somewhere to be depressed or anything too. It rolls out the audiobook like you can even pretend like it's fiction. It just rolls out like a really good story. But when you're done, it'll make you never want to get involved with the court system ever. It is bizarre. There was a student being interviewed yesterday at UCLA campus, and two students, a boy and a girl, and they were saying how disappointed they were that the cops weren't protecting the protesters. And so just imagine these people get together, and they get hundreds of people get together, and they're occupying UCLA campus illegally. And they are, you know, the potential for disaster and hostility is there. And they're upset because they don't feel like the police are protecting them at night when they're sleeping. The irony is that in the same interview that Megyn Kelly does with you and Dr. J.C. Shea, and this is a huge point too. Dr. J.C. Shea points out the psychological implications of watching a police station fall and what that does to the psyche of humanity. And it's a really it's way bigger than people think. It's for anyone who is paying attention, it's massive. It's like you finally have this kind of this reality, like, wow, I really am personally responsible and personally accountable for everything. There's no one coming to save you. And I can't imagine living in Minneapolis just knowing how, I mean, it's just absolutely corrupt. It's as corrupt can be. It's when he said that on Megyn Kelly, I was like, oh, I've been trying to articulate that now for 3 years, what it means to watch a police station fall. I mean, it's the end. Even the bad guys don't like that. You know what I mean? Everyone wants to know the rules. There are no rules. It's fucking Mad Max.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, it's interesting. Dr. J.C. Shea, we kind of just came together on a whim. He sort of knew someone, and then I knew someone, and I knew I needed help with the book for an editor. And he came at this. He's a former police officer himself. You know, he'd been a cop for a few years and brought that insight. And he lives states away from where I am. And, you know, it's interesting how, you know, we were able to sort of tackle this together, but absolutely not only sending a message in Minneapolis, you know, but all across the world, and you know, and I focus on this a lot now with my reporting. Alpha News is an independent group that I report for here in the cities. But, you know, there's been now it's 9 first responders that have lost their lives in the last 10 months from this area. Unreal, this war on law enforcement.
Say that again.
We have 9, 8 of them are police officers. 1 was a fire medic that have died in the line of duty.
What's the timeline on that?
In this area, in the matter of 10 months, that's never happened in history before.
Oh my God.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. So this is all happening at a time also when you have a new Hennepin County attorney who has since been reelected, who's even more left of where Mike Freeman was, who was part of this case. But
by more left, you're saying not trying criminals, letting criminals go. That's what
exactly.
Means,
so
more
she,
left right now,
she
right?
is now charged. Exactly. She's now charged a Minnesota state trooper with murder for a case from this summer, despite the fact no one from her office even feels morally comfortable with the charges. So they've left the case. So she has now hired a DC based law firm to come in and prosecute this Minnesota state trooper. So one would think that, okay, maybe we would learn from, you know, our mistakes here, but no, in fact, so many have just, and I will say that not even so many, it's getting fewer and fewer every day. For this Trooper Londergren is his name, Trooper Ryan Londergren. There were 400 people that showed up at the courthouse just on Monday to support this officer. That wasn't happening, obviously, with this George Floyd situation, but so many people are just absolutely sick of what's gone on. And so not only in Trooper Londergren's case, you have 4 now signed declarations to say, you know what, this guy followed his training and their use of force expert. They decided they couldn't use because he came back and said, this trooper followed his training. There's not a crime here. But yet she's still continuing to charge, you know, there are these charges against him for murder. It's unbelievable how tax dollars are being spent, especially in Hennepin County here in Minnesota.
There were 3 prosecutors who were offered the George Floyd case who turned it down, basically saying that there was no case there. They pushed forward. And what you're saying with this Lundgren case is that there's no one who wants to prosecute it, but since she's insisting they prosecute the cop, they've gone outside. Fucking nuts, man. Hey, I know you have limited time. There's a couple things I'd love to try to get in here. That 27, they received who received the $27 million? The county of whatever county that is that Minneapolis is in, they paid $27 million to George Floyd's family. Who got that money? Who do I write to try to get some money from? Who should I send an email to?
There's a lot of blank check writing in Minneapolis for sure. $27 million came from the city of Minneapolis to George Floyd's family as part of the settlement. And something also that's usually never highlighted is the fact that Keith Ellison, the attorney general who led the prosecution against Derek Chauvin, his son is the one who helped to broker that deal. Who sits on the Minneapolis City Council helped to broker that deal between the city and George Floyd's family. So it's crazy.
Who got that money? Did like his boy's mom's dead? Does he have kids? Who got the? Did one family member get the check, or do they split it up? What happened?
I'm not exactly sure how it all. I mean, the day that this was awarded, because it was it was very bizarre to me, like a press conference in a way, like a big check moment kind of thing. Crazy during jury selection in Derek right. Chauvin's trial. So that's important to point out.
Because it implicates that he's guilty, right? It implicates that he's guilty.
Of course. Yes, of course. Yes.
What a great reality show that would be. I don't mean to be a dick, but I can only imagine how it's just screwed that family up all that money. It must be just crazy to be what I assume is just absolutely dirt poor, and then all of a sudden be a millionaire. Has anyone ever talked about making a reality show with them, or is there any coverage on what they did with the money? Did they leave the state? Do we know how they divided the money?
Well, nobody ever lived here in Minnesota besides George Floyd. So they're certainly not here. I do know that, but there's been very little since all of that I've seen. I believe they're based in Texas and in a couple other states as well.
I'd be so curious if they're like driving Lamborghinis and just like what. God, I really want to see that. Someone should cover that. That would be so great. How are you on time? I know you said you had an hour. Can I get a couple more questions in?
Oh yeah, yep. I got time for. I just have a, you know, the news meeting. The news is starting up here in Minneapolis. As you've heard, I have a lot to cover. But yes, I can answer a couple more questions. No problem, Seven.
Okay, let me do this because I really want to plug you. But then I want to go back to some other things. Tell me about Alpha News. How you ended up there, and are you enjoying it?
Yeah, no, it's great to work with like-minded people. I guess I guess for a long time I thought that I was crazy. You know, like, do I live on Mars for having these thoughts or something? But I'm like, wait a minute, there are other people like me. Right. And we like to say, you know, we're uncensored and unafraid. That's our slogan, which I also like because I think there's a lot of lazy reporting, to be quite honest, nowadays. And a lot of groupthink, but you know, there are different topics that we would never tackle on the evening news that we're able to on Alpha News. But we're just a little startup that started a few years ago. We have hundreds of thousands of people though that see our stuff now every day. We consistently break more stories in Minnesota than anybody else because I think that goes to show you know, there's a lot of, as I said, groupthink, and everybody else kind of is representing. It's this, you know, if you watch the news, it's the same story told the same way, you know, in the same order. And then, hey, there's weather and sports. But there's, you know, so much more going on. And I just don't think that the local news really does a very good job informing the public.
You know who I kind of, I follow this account. I love this account. I think everyone should follow it. It kind of reminds me, of Rebel News.
Yeah, that's that's a high compliment. Thanks. But they were you know, more of, there's a lot of kind of newspaper reporters at Alpha News, but I came to them and I just said, "Hey, could I do some, you know, videos for you guys?" And you don't need a big fancy television station nowadays in downtown Minneapolis to do this. And you can still get your message out. So it's been great. It's been a great move for me. And it's also a place where they care about the truth, because I thought for a long time that nobody seemed to anymore.
When I was going through what I went through, I had a really good support around me. And, although I felt like I just had a bunch of shit like thrown on me, like manure, and that I was underneath it. And now 3 years later, I'm like, I can't even believe it. I'm like the biggest fruit tree on the farm. I cannot believe how happy. And are you sensing that too? Now that you've come out the other side, are you like, yeah, like you were, and a ton of people have told me this. Thank you for the podcast and having the podcast through the pandemic, because I thought I was crazy. And I would watch this podcast and be like, oh shit, I'm not crazy. It really is only 82-year-olds who are dying with four or more comorbidities. Oh my God. Am I racist because I don't think that George Floyd, because I don't think Derek Chauvin should have gone to jail. And people start questioning themselves because they're all of the media, I guess the term is gaslighting them. Do you feel like, hey, you've come out the other side and you're like, damn, Liz Collins is the shit. I did it. Are you there yet?
I wish I had your confidence.
I mean, you are amazing. I mean, I see you every day in my feed. I follow you so closely.
Thank you.
I think you're just an incredible role model.
Oh, that means a lot. Actually, it's funny because we just we had a generous donor come forward to Alpha News that said, "Hey, I want to, you know, help you guys advertise the Fall of Minneapolis." We don't have a, you know, budget for that, which has been amazing that this many people have even been able to watch it. Obviously, it helped with some high profile guests reaching out to do some publicity and whatnot. But we then went and bought a billboard in downtown Minneapolis. We thought that'd be fun to advertise the Fall of Minneapolis. And holy cow, we've upset a lot of people. so that's been good X fodder these last couple days. But I would say the majority of people have been very supportive, and they fight back against the trolls and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I am in a better place. You know, as a reporter, I always kind of hope for, as cliche as that is, some sort of happy ending. And that hasn't happened yet. But we'll continue to follow these stories. And I think that there's a lot of apologizing that needs to happen, and a lot of people who need to just say, you know what, I got this wrong. People that actually, you know, mattered in all of this. But I don't know if, you know, that will happen.
Is this the billboard right here, the fall of Minneapolis?
Oh, you got it. Yeah.
Yeah. I tried to make it bigger. I couldn't. Yeah. Wow. That's awesome.
We took it. We took it right there. We were looking right around George Floyd Square, but they didn't have any good billboard space. That's 38th in Chicago, Minneapolis. This is right in downtown Minneapolis. Yeah.
You're having a great hair day there too. Good job.
This is kind of a little early for me. So it takes me a while to get my hair figured out here. So yeah.
Derek Chauvin in jail gets stabbed 22 times. When do you hear that news and does that break your heart? Like, are you like, do you go into full panic? Do you cry?
Oh, absolutely. It was completely awful. What's crazy too, is it was the attorney general, the guy who put him in prison, keep in mind, that gets the first word on his condition, not even Derek Chauvin's family. So they didn't even know anything. So it was just awful. And, you know, we've been able to talk to Derek since and about the attack and whatnot, but he's sort of left alone in this law library for the first time that he is left alone. So the whole thing is very suspect and suspicious. He's working on his case, making copies at the time it happens. And this guy comes up who he didn't know. He'd only been in that unit, it sounds like, for a few weeks before all this. So he mysteriously has moved to this area. And he's behind him and starts stabbing him, tried to kill him. I mean, he's admitted
22 times, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's stabbed all over. And Derek, his condition, you know, isn't the best. He even struggles to walk now, you know, months later, had some nerve damage from all of this. And more than that, too, he's been moved to this medical unit in the facility. Before, he would be able to work every day and go outside and whatnot. He'd kind of been described as this model prisoner to his family. But now he's sort of kept away from everyone and doesn't have access to his materials or his computer like he used to. But meanwhile, this is a story we recently did on Alpha News. The person responsible for stabbing him has access to his materials and his computer. So, and is not in solitary confinement or anything, the actual person who tried to kill him.
This is nuts. I can't. So he was stabbed 22 times. How close did he get to dying? Sounds close.
Yeah. I mean, there was a guard that came up to basically help to, you know, hold pressure over his wounds. And if that wouldn't have happened, he would have bled out, as, you know, graphic as that sounds. And he lost consciousness a couple times on the way to the hospital. So it was very, very serious.
Was he stabbed in the neck?
He was. Yep.
Oh my God. Will he get out? Will Derek get out? Does he eventually get out? I mean, before he has a 22-year sentence, right?
Yeah. Right. So he is currently, well, just to back up a bit, the U.S. Supreme Court, it was shortly after the documentary as well, they said, you know, they're not going to take the case. And his attorneys had went ahead and argued for a change of venue, that there was no reason that he should have been tried in Minneapolis. So the U.S. Supreme Court says no. After the Minnesota State Supreme Court says no, you know, he's not getting a new trial. The U.S. Supreme Court says nope, he's not getting a new trial. So I know that Chauvin is working on a new appeal with a new attorney. So something should be happening there, but I don't know. I mean, after, you know, kind of tracking this so closely, I'm not sure I have much faith in our legal system and justice system, which is supposed to be the best in the world, right? That's what we're led to believe, but it truly is so corrupt and controlled by the elites. I think Tu Tao himself is the one who said that. And I think we've definitely seen that in this case. Does anybody have the courage to take this on again? It's really a long road ahead.
By the way, once you're an FBI informant, you're always an FBI informant. You're never a former FBI informant. It's kind of like getting any vaccines. Once you get a vaccine, your immune system is permanently changed for the rest of your life. You don't, it's not like alcohol where you're drunk today and not drunk tomorrow. It doesn't work like that. God, insane that he was stabbed. I can't even believe that's real. I've been sending the movie to a lot of people, and the restraint that Derek Chauvin used was called MRT, maximum restraint technique. And those were the two pages that you mentioned earlier in the training manual that were removed. Correct? Someone sent me a text this morning and said, hey, people are pushing back, saying that in the manual, it also says that the technique should only have been used for 30 seconds. Is there any truth to that?
No, it's interesting. There's been a couple of these people who write, you know, that they've debunked the documentary and whatnot, which is actually amazing. They have this much time and they haven't done one single interview or talked to anyone actually involved in the case at all. So it's amazing they have so much to say. But no, they the policy itself specifically states about waiting for an ambulance to arrive. And what's happening in this moment, and you can again see in the video and talk to the officers who were there, is that they recognize something is wrong with him medically. But if you talk to them, they think that he's passing out, and that's not uncommon. They think, you know, something's going on with this guy and he's,
I mean, we've all seen, anyone who has eyes and walks around the city sees people passing out on Trank every day. I can go downtown in Santa Cruz and see it right now.
And there's a reason they wouldn't then take the handcuffs off, because people can pop back up and, you know, he had been resisting and whatnot. And they had no idea the ambulance would take as long. So there's all of these factors playing a role in all of this. Did they think he was dying? You know, certainly not. And, you know, and I've asked that, you know, same question. It's, you know, obviously a question that needs to be asked. But they went ahead and they didn't even put the hobble on George Floyd, which is also, you know, part of this maximal restraint technique, because they recognize something is going on with him medically. So they're also kind of like downgrading force, would be a way to put it, to not hobble George Floyd. You can hear they're talking about that in the conversation, that they decide not to. They're not gonna hobble him, which is what they would, you know, have done in normal circumstances.
And what is the hobble? I'm trying to look it up.
Basically just a device that would connect his hands to his legs.
Oh, okay. I see it here. Okay.
And they don't end up doing that.
So it looks like almost like this is the hobble. They don't do this to him, for people who are having trouble picturing it.
They used to call it like the hog tie. You know, obviously they don't call that. Use that term anymore.
That would be inappropriate to call it that.
Well, and what's interesting too, this MRT, I mean, it had been a part of training since about the 90s. I could find it as that. That's why all of these officers, and I've heard from so many people, even people, members of the FBI, who have said, we knew what this was. This was MRT. Like, this is a very standard, I'm not a cop. But a lot of people knew that, you know, so many of these guys were lying on the stand.
So there is no truth to that the MRT should only be used for 30 seconds. That's not in the manual, basically it
spelled out in the manual is hold until EMS arrives.
Unbelievable. Hey, thank you so much. If there's ever anything I can do for you, I'll be watching closely. I'm a huge fan. I pull up your posts on a regular basis here on the podcast. Thanks for what you're doing at Alpha News. And it's great to meet you. And congratulations on the movie. As weird as it sounds, fantastic movie, great accomplishment just from the filmmaker's perspective. Good job.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for the support. And you have a great audience. It's kind of fun to watch the chat, I must say.
Yeah, it's a wild place. Hey, let me ask you this one thing. When I invited you on, and you, I'm guessing you vetted me, were you like, what the fuck does this guy want to do with me? This is a fitness podcast.
Well, I was going to say, I was kind of jealous of many of the people you've had on. I mean, I certainly work out, but this is a whole nother level on this show. So I thought there'd be some sort of challenge or something like that. But I'm glad we just kept it in the lane that I'm familiar with. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, hey, thanks for doing it. I hope our paths run into each other again. I have Chauvin and you and my Google alerts. And I hope there's an evolution. I can have you back on and we can talk
Absolutely.
About brighter days for the crew. All right. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day, Seven. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Ciao. Liz Collins. Wow. Listen, you jackasses. Some of you are like, where's his computer? Where's his computer? I feel bad that he has to work out to get his TV set. Saber. Morning. Isn't someone already sending a MacBook? You don't worry about what I'm sending him. Stay in your goddamn lane. Thank you, Real Kevin. John Young's a goofy bastard and should have to work. Listen. I do propaganda and promotion. The least he can... John Young is getting a new computer? Yeah. The other day I made an impulse buy. He was on the show and his shit was breaking up. Does he have a tracking number for it? How about fuck you? I'm gonna call Apple right now and because you guys said that and stop shipment. Have it sent to my house. Douche canoes. I hate that shit when you guys fucking butt in on fucking shit like that. Mind your own fucking business. Call Apple now. I went to Greg's house last night and we were hanging out and we were talking about that question that someone asked about him having polio. And he said some really interesting shit about it. He basically said, imagine being friends with someone who's black for 5 years and then one day being like, how come you never talk about about being black? And then he went on to say that there's people out there that have an image of themselves and they try to live up to that image. And when he said that, that hit home so hard. And I'm like, so you don't have the image of yourself as being the guy with polio? He goes, no, it's not even in my top 20. It's like, I'm not trying to be that guy. Like, that's not the image I'm doing. And I thought, oh, that's so interesting. He's not trying to be that guy. That's not part of the image he's trying to give off, right? And we all know those people. When I was a dirty hippie, there were two groups of hippies. There were those of us who were just like, you know, just stoners and you know, eating out of dumpsters and getting our clothes from the free box. And then there were the kids who were putting like mud and egg in their hair to make their dreadlocks instead of it just forming naturally from not showering. Or there were kids who cut the holes in their pants and then sewed the patches in so that they look like hippies. And those are people that had an image of themselves and then were like trying to live up to that image. And it just made me realize all the people out there that they're trapped. That's like all the when I was watching the protesters yesterday, that's what they are. Like the vast majority of them. They're trying to live to the image. They want to be the college student who's like protesting. They don't even know why. They're just trying to, it's their image that they're trying to build. Instead of just operating off of logic. It's fascinating. Fascinating, fascinating, fascinating. Those are people who are like in the matrix. If you're lucky, if you're lucky, you at some point in your youth, like 18 to 25, you do some soul searching and you realize, oh shit, I'm like nothing. I can be anything. I'm not really Sevan Matossian. That's just the name that was given to me that I'm trying to hold that shit together now. And some of you, as your shit unravels, and it gets too intense for you and you realize that you're just nothing, you run to the Bible. And I understand. It's not a bad place to run. And you start reading and memorizing the Bible as fast as you can to shore up the holes as the light of uncertainty penetrates your being. Because the thought of operating without order from the outside scares the shit out of you. I get it. It is scary. So that's that. That was cool having Liz Collins on. I can't tell you how fucking excited I was. Usually I just fucking roll into my office with my coffee thinking I'm cool as shit, turn on my computer and just, oh, sorry, Jedediah Snelson, I don't run anywhere. Sorry, my bad. Be more sensitive to my comments. I was so excited. I was so excited. I got here 10 minutes early. Thank God I got here 10 minutes early because my keyboard wasn't working. I hate it when that shit happens. Like my mouse is, I have all these OCD things I do around the show. Like I'm always charging my mouse, charging my keyboard. I think that the fact that my phone is always fucked up on my Bluetooth is like I'm supposed to learn something from that. I don't know what. It's the universe talking to me. Thanks, guys. Great interview, Sevan. Denise Moore, thanks. I was pretty happy with it. I definitely did not want to fuck it up. But I also wanted to be myself. I wanted to make sure that, like, all the interviews I've seen of her are stuffy as shit. And I didn't want to do that one with her. And she was great. She was amazing. She was great. I'm telling you, if you see other interviews with her, the people don't let her talk because they're so excited to share with her and process with her all the shit they learn from her. So usually she's just chilling. And that Alpha News, man, what a great Instagram account. I wanted to ask her about James O'Keefe, if she knows James. I bet you they'd be buddies. Did you guys see James O'Keefe, what happened with him in the CIA yesterday? What a great Instagram account that is. Oh, Pedro just got a pair of Born Primitives. That's cool. It's funny how many people, like in my immediate circle, like my close friends, got Born Primitive shoes. Wouldn't it be fun to sit in a room with like 500 liberals and watch that movie, The Fall of Minneapolis? Like, they'd be watching the screen, but you'd be watching them. All right. We are 10 minutes away. I'm going to go refill my coffee. We are 10 minutes. Oh, I should ask Sousa to fire up the Instagram. Let me see if I can, or maybe Will. Can somebody fire up the Instagram and tell people about the release of the Robin workout? I can't even see my phone with my glasses on. And Vindicate is sponsoring the Kill Taylor show. That's awesome this week. That is so cool. Okay, so in 9 minutes, we'll be back on another, I don't know what you call it, another show. And it's going to be the release of the Robin workout. If you're not familiar with that, I'll tell you all about the Robin workout and its relationship to the Batman workout. It's a Andrew Hiller special from HillerFit. And Sarah Cox from CA Peptides was kind enough to offer to buy John a TV set. And then we thought we would just make it like a whole party and have him do the Robin workout. Oh, the Robin workout's posted? Oh, awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Let me see. Where is it? Instagram? Is it on the Real Sevan podcast? The Real. And this week on Kill Taylor, Tyson Bajan will be there. Oh my God, they make such good. Have you seen this post? Wow. They do such good work on the Real Sevan podcast Instagram. Who does that? That must be Will Brandstetter or Patrick Rios. See you on Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for the week 2 of Kill Taylor. Look at that. Francisco Gomez, Brandon Smith, Kyle. Heroes. Like real heroes. 9 minutes on this channel. Yeah, on the Sevan podcast, but on a different. I could get a link for you, but I'm not doing that. Where's the workout posted? Anyway. Oh, is it on Hiller's? Is it on Hiller's? I have to go make coffee. I don't have time for this shit. Andrew Hiller. Andrew has 41,000 followers. My God. Oh, shit. There it is. Wow. Wow. There it is. John Young CrossFit attempts to complete Robin live. If he's successful, he'd get a new TV. Oh, my apologies, Sabir. He gets the TV anyway. He's going to get the TV anyway. I apologize. Three rounds for time. One squat snatch. 245, three overhead squats, 245, five strict parallel handstand pushups, seven Wuhan press at 245. How many? Oh, three rounds. Do you guys know what the Wuhan press is? You guys are going to trip when you see the Wuhan press. It's crazy. I saw that guy Goob do it. I'd never seen it before. The guy who just fucks people on Instagram. Anyway, okay. Deadlift, hip thrust, bench press. Yeah, it's like how Jedediah Nelson has to work out. It's paying homage to the adaptive class, I guess. You got to do a deadlift from the seated position. All right. Great show. See you guys in 6 minutes. Love you guys. Bye-bye.